so we have a time to have a little bit of discussion. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to go back to this questions we did, cases we did, and then we're going to ask panel for opinion. But if you do have any question regarding these cases, then please come up to the mic so that we can have some opinion from the audience as well. So this is the first case. A 52-year-old female presents to your clinic with instant 1.2 centimeter polyp at the fundus of the gallbladder with ultrasound. Which of the following the most appropriate management? So maybe Dr. Belichick, what do you think about this case?
I assume the patient's asymptomatic?
It's completely asymptomatic, yes.
Serrated polyp or non-serrated polyp?
It's not serrated, it's pedunculated somewhat. So it's a very gray, not obvious, and very suspicious. That's the case, yes. So in this case, you know, what is your next step of management?
I would do a laparoscopic cholecystectomy, send the patient home the same day, and not follow with ultrasounds.
Sure. The question being, you know, when it comes back to the cancer, do you do frozen section in your operating room and go forward with the definitive resection in this case, or you say, okay, you know, we'll take the gallbladder out for you and we send, you know, everything to the pathology, and if it comes back, you know, positive, then we'll go back and do a definitive operation?
Typically not, because I think, especially with a 1.2 centimeter polyp, I don't think that it's likely that the discussion with the patient beforehand will be around an extended cholecystectomy, a radical cholecystectomy, so I'd be more inclined to stop, wait for the final pathology, re-review it, and then decide on the next step.
Yeah. How about the Dr. Kingham?
Yeah, so I actually agree. I would proceed with a laparoscopic cholecystectomy. I like the idea that Dr. Fong was talking about, where often I'll take the cystic plate with it. And for a 1.2 centimeter polyp, the chance of that having an invasive component is about 1%. So the conversation there is, it's extremely unlikely that this is a cancer. This is a risk reduction surgery. You may need additional surgery in the future. And I would rather have a definitive pathology if it is a T1A, because most likely if it is a cancer, it's T1A, and you have the cyst and you have your cystic plate, then you're done. And so I think it's good to do it in two settings.
Is there any different opinion from the panel?
Yeah. So again, very reasonable options that Anton and Peter have mentioned. I personally would talk to the patient about the entire gamut of possibilities, and usually in a case like this, I would offer a total cholecystectomy, which means the entire cystic plate. I do a frozen section, and if positive, I would actually go do a lymph node dissection at the same time, usually now robotically. It's a matter of style here. I don't think that the substance is different, and it requires a bigger investment in time in that first visit, okay, to go do all that, to talk about the implications. And so it's a matter of whether you put the time in early or to put the time in late, okay? Yeah.
But Yuman, would you be set up to do a robotic cholecystectomy for a polyp?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you prefer...
Because most of these people are sent to me for possible cancer. Because I don't live in a general hospital, and so these folks don't come to me for gallstones, or they've already been told this might be something bad, and so it's a different setting, and it's also a matter of schedules.
I think the open cholecystectomy versus the minimal invasive approach, in this case, it's probably vitally important not to violate the gallbladder. So if you have, as Dr. Fong mentioned, if you have this fear or any factors that weighs into risking the violating the gallbladder, then I think a open approach could be justified in this situation. I think that, you know, old days, a bold question, you know, you should say always open gallbladder, but I think advancement of the technique and the imaging technique, everything else, I think it's justified to do a minimal invasive approach on these gallbladders nowadays. So any questions or any comments from the floor for this case? Okay, we're going to go to the second one. Second one, 68-year-old male undergoes laparoscopy cholecystectomy for suspected gallbladder cancer. Intraoperative fluorescein section shows T1B and zero gallbladder cancer. Preoperative CT shows no distant metastatic disease or regional lymphadenopathy. This case, maybe go to Dr. Gingham. What do you think about this case? You know, you kind of suspect go in and had a, in the mind of just do the whole thing, come back as T1B. So what is the current recommendation and how
you... So in, you know, if a cholecystectomy is done, frozen section is T1B, and you've already done preoperative staging and you know that there's no sign of regional or distant metastasis, then I would, in the same setting, go on to liver resection and portal lymphadenectomy to complete the staging.
In terms of taking, how much of liver parenchyma would you like to take on this one? You want to take a 4B5, or you want to take just the rim of the liver? What's the extent of the liver resection?
I think there's a lot of differences in what people do in this situation. While my operative note says a 4B5 wedge resection in this situation with a T1B cancer, it's three, you know, the fundus of the gallbladder is, with the angle of the liver, is very far from the base of your gallbladder. So the incision may be 4 centimeters back into the liver from the fundus of the gallbladder. But in reality, by the time you get to the bottom of the gallbladder, it's only a couple centimeters. So it's not a formal segment 4B and 5 resection. And where it's located on the gallbladder is also very helpful in determining this. If it's on the peritoneal side, doing a formal 4B5 resection seems a bit too extensive.
Any other opinion?
But I think the key part to this case is the word suspected gallbladder cancer, because I assume that you've had the discussion with the patient beforehand, rather than doing a laparoscopic cholecystectomy, suspecting a gallbladder cancer, doing a frozen section, and then continuing with a radical cholecystectomy without any prior discussion.
Yeah, and actually, if I had a suspicion, I wouldn't just do a laparoscopic cholecystectomy and frozen section. My scenario would be a little different than what we're presented with here. I would do a small liver resection, do the frozen section, confirm it's cancer, and then do the lymph node dissection. So probably remove one step from it. But in this situation, if you're found with this, having talked to them ahead of time, then I'd proceed with the liver and node dissection.
How about the practice in Japan? Is this pretty same in Japan? Or?
Yeah, so in this situation, so maybe laparoscopic approach now. And so maybe precise pathological review is warranted because of the depth of invasion is unknown during operation. And so maybe in Japan, and so after laparoscopic cholecystectomy, and so meticulous and precise pathologic report, and so reoperation to open cholecystectomy with liver resection and portal lymphadenectomy, maybe.
Okay. Any comments from the floor regarding this case? It's relatively clear, I would say. Case 3.
Come back to that for a second. Sure. So the case 2. Obviously, this is probably, if we were taking someone to the operating room thinking it may be a T1B gallbladder cancer, it's a big polyp, okay? These are the big polyps. And just taking that little rim of liver to start saves so much time, okay? And it's so little in excess of a gallbladder cancer. But let's say somebody has a T1B gallbladder cancer removed elsewhere and sent to you, and you put a scope in, and there are gallstones lying around the belly. What do you do, okay? Peter, what do you do? Because we see this all the time, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody sent to us for a very early gallbladder cancer, and it clearly has ruptured in the last operation. And now you put a scope in, and there is gallstones lying in the right upper quadrant. So what do you do there?
So often we'll know that ahead of time on imaging. And you'll see in my answer to the next case, more and more we're starting to advocate for observation and neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And whether or not you believe in chemotherapy in this situation, I think observation, you can make a good argument for. Wait 3 months and see what happens, because it's very likely this patient will end up having peritoneal disease. And this is not a surgical, there's no surgical cure here.
Yeah. Dr. Wakai?
Yeah.
What would you do? Gallstones.
Yeah, maybe. Observation is precise imaging study is necessary. And so multi-step, if possible, multi-step tissue sections. And so we determine the depths of invasion. And so liver bed side or peritoneal side or in the wall, lymphatic vessel invasion. And so more information is necessary for radical surgery.
What about just reading the pathology report and it says the gallbladder arrived in pathology in three pieces? That happens too, okay? Yeah. And then what do you do, okay? And you scan and do a pre-op staging and you don't see stones, but you worry. And so, Anton, what would you do there?
Yeah, so, you know, just based on the previous slides, I mean, the five-year survival with any bile spillage is 16%. It's dismal. Mm-hmm. So I think that you are obliged to provide the test of time and perhaps a trial of systemic therapy, which may or may not work, but at least the disease will declare itself one way or the other. I also think it gets back to the basic principles of a cholecystectomy, whether it's for benign disease or malignant disease. Try not to spill bile, try not to spill stones, and try and put the gallbladder in a bag intact and extract it. I think that should, you know, gets back to the just very basic principles of laparoscopic surgery.
Right. So I was going to ask the same question for this T2 gallbladder cancer. You know, sometimes they go in and do a subtotal cholecystectomy, thinking this is acute cholecystitis or chronic cholecystitis, and then I ended up having a gallbladder cancer in there. So that's probably the same question you are discussing right at this moment. So third case is a 47-year-old female who is referred to you with incidental T2 gallbladder carcinoma after laparoscopic cholecystectomy, featured the following the most appropriate management. So of the port site, this one is a port site. In the port site, we have a little bit different variation or maybe a little bit different interpretation. But I think the overall message is peritoneal. It's just a manifestation of part of the peritoneal disease. And that's the overall message. But I think Dr. Fong has a clear opinion and yeah. Dr. Kingham has.
So let me defend myself just a little bit. I've seen two cases of a port site recurrence treated by radiation that turned out to be a colonic fistula, okay, that turned into a colonic fistula. After seeing those, it's hard for me not to just get rid of the port sites and never worry about them again, and because that's just terrible, okay? And knowing that there's a 19% chance that the port sites are positive, to just wedge them out and then I get staging, and I prevent the radiation treatment for local port site recurrence. So again, I don't disagree that I don't think that by and large it does anything for therapy except to change that, okay? But staging, it's great, okay? Because it tells you immediately the patient should have adjuvant therapy even if they have no negative disease and there's no residual tumor on the gallbladder bed. Because that's the other group. Somebody who has no liver bed tumor that you can find. They're node negative, and now you have a positive port site. Those people get chemotherapy in my practice. Yes. So again, I don't disagree with not doing it, though. It just said in my practice, that's what I do, we will never resolve it with a randomized trial of any type. But having seen two colonic fistulas from radiation of a local recurrence of a port site, that is so terrible for the patient that I just cut them out.
I think if you have a palpable disease, before the operation, you know, maybe you can stick a needle into it, but it's come back like a inconclusive. What is your...
Yeah, palpable disease, I stage them by PET.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the PET scan solves everything, okay? Right. And most of the time, you'll see the peritoneal disease, you'll see the ovarian disease, you'll see the bone disease, you'll see the liver disease, and it'll be very, very extensive. But if I stage them, and I see nothing, and I still, there have been times that I've biopsied it, yep. Meaning a true cut right through the mass and say adeno, and they get chemotherapy, and if they remain solitary, that's how, I have two or three cases where people are long-term survivors from just the port, but those are rare, okay? And I never tell the patients that they are going to be a long-term survivor because they're so rare. But again, the case I showed, that was a 14 or 16-year survivor. But it's extraordinarily rare that that happens.
So the difficulty is we really don't know how to differentiate those people in a biology, cancer biology standpoint. So we really don't have the good method to do.
I'm going to backpedal a little bit as far as port site extractions in that I think that perhaps it should be done selectively. So the patient who, you're questioning the method of extraction, you've treated with systemic therapy, you've done laparoscopy, there is no residual disease, but you look at the primary operative report and there is some spillage or it's questionable as to how it was extracted, I might be inclined to excise the port site under certain circumstances.
Do you do those operations at the time of those biopsy and come back positive, or you're gonna just back out and say, we're gonna do a chemotherapy on you and then see how they respond and then go back and do the port site resection and definitive
operation? At the definitive operation.
I will also defend myself by saying that my port site excisions don't look like the ones that Peter showed.
Well, I showed the photo to back up my argument.
Because most of the people come to see you with a previous laparoscopic resection, right? Then if you actually just come straight down and do a midline, you get the subxiphoid port and you get the umbilical port, okay? It's really a wide midline incision with closure. And then the other ones are just a little excision for the 5-millimeter ports of the lateral and subcostal separate. So usually it doesn't look like the incision you show.
True, but if you're truly resecting them, it's a full thickness resection from the skin through the fascia where you're really leaving a hole where there is a hernia risk.
Yep.
Despite the morbidity of it, I actually don't see the indication except if you put a scope in or at laparotomy and you see something that you're suspicious. Then the first thing I do is I biopsy that. If that's positive, then I stop. There is nothing else to do. This is stage 4 disease. So it's really, to me, just a marker of disease. If there's something obvious, biopsy it and stop your operation, they need chemotherapy. If there's nothing obvious, you might as well do random biopsies from 50 spots in the peritoneum, because to me, that's just a sampling of the peritoneum.
Correct. On the floor?
It's Flavio Rocca from Seattle. This is an excellent discussion, and we can certainly tell there's not a lot of resolved issues. But I wanted to push this illustrious panel a little bit on the question of lymph nodes. So, you go in for an incidental gallbladder cancer, you're doing the portal dissection, there's an obviously suspicious node, you send it for frozen section, it's positive. Do you bother with the liver resection at that point? We know the pattern of failure is going to be distant. What's taking out the rim of liver? Let's say it was a T2 gallbladder cancer. Is that really going to matter in that scenario? That's the first question. The second question is adjuvant therapy. Do we really think BILCAP is going to be the answer for a node-positive gallbladder cancer when only 18% of patients in that trial were gallbladder cancer? And on the intention to treat analysis, the trial was not positive. Would you feel comfortable with adjuvant Xeloda in that patient, or would you want a more active regimen? Thank you.
Anybody?
Two good questions. So I spoke about some of the chemotherapy data. I agree with you. The BILCAP trial suffers from what most of these trials suffer from. It's a combination of all biliary tract trials. It's the best we have in the adjuvant setting. And in the U.S., at least, most patients are not treated with capecitabine. They're treated with gemcitabine cisplatinum. And in that neoadjuvant trial, that's why that's built in as the neoadjuvant part of it. Now, you can argue that that should be in the adjuvant side of it as well, and that will be a criticism of that trial. But because there are level 1 data to support capecitabine adjuvant, I think that's why that was done. So most of our patients we do treat with GemCis, so I do think there's a good argument to do that. And your question about the lymph node, I think is a good one. You could even make the argument if there's a 4-centimeter lymph node, do an EUS and biopsy, and if it's positive, just treat with chemotherapy. When in the operating room, if it's positive on a frozen section, not just palpably, but on a frozen section, if it's a small liver resection, honestly, yes, I often would do it. It's taking out 2 centimeters of the liver with the gallbladder. But you could make the argument to biopsy that node ahead of time and avoid surgery altogether. As you could tell from the theme of my talk, I'm a sort of a minimalist and a pessimist about gallbladder cancer. I think the role of surgery, for the most part, is staging in many patients.
Let me push you back, okay? Yeah. Let me first state, if it's lymph node positive, almost no one is cured. Almost no one is cured, okay? And that is the data in the Western world. The only people who write that folks are cured are the Japanese, okay? That's because they are willing to do a Whipple. I will say that again. They are willing to do a Whipple. And it took me a long time to figure out why the Whipple. And it's the nodes, okay? If somebody has a T2, T3 gallbladder cancer and the liver part is really taken care of and it's a minor liver resection, it then it's not an issue about anything but whether you're going to clear nodes, okay? And if there are nodes positive back there, you're not going to go get it by just plucking out little nodes off the back of the pancreas. Okay, you have to go do a Whipple in order to clear nodes down there, okay?
Sure.
And that's something that took me a long, long time to go figure out, okay? I'm still unwilling to do that on most patients, okay? If somebody needs a major liver resection and a Whipple, I'm probably not about to help that patient. But if somebody needs a minor liver resection because it's a T2 gallbladder cancer and there are just positive nodes, it's a node-positive phenotype. There's a certain phenotype of a disease where, and it could even be papillary, where it is a T2 and now there are many, many nodes behind the pancreas. Are you willing to go take that pancreas? So I let it go with the test time and neoadjuvant, okay? So let me push you back. If somebody is like that, you biopsy the lymph node endoscopically, because you should, okay? And in those patients, if you suspect it on a CT scan, you probably should do either an EUS biopsy, most efficient, or in America, you would get a PET scan, and that would be positive. And then you put them on neoadjuvant therapy, and now it's 4 months later. Everything is smaller. There is no distant disease, but it's very clear that it kind of gets dirty back there in the back of the pancreas. What would you do?
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate question. I think if we have effective chemotherapy, then that may be worthwhile doing aggressive surgery. But mm-hmm. right now, at this state, I don't think that's the case.
Right.
And I don't think the lymphadenectomy is therapeutic. It's a staging
tool. No, but
tool.
I've seen patients where the nodes truly shrink away, okay? But I don't think they're totally gone, okay? And I will go back in and clean out the gallbladder bed and do a Whipple. And I have some long-term survivors, but I haven't done enough of those to actually have a series.
Right.
We should actually say in America how many of us are doing that and gather up the cases, even if they are just a handful, to say, is it worthwhile? Because in the Japanese literature, there's good data that there are people who are long-term survivors from that.
Let me just go over this last case, because that's exactly what we are talking about. So this is the last case, that's 72 years old female, incidental gallbladder mass, into a CT and PET. And
yep.
Basically what
right
this
there.
Is showing is this is like a necrotic node here in the back of the hepatic artery. Although it's not PET avid because it's dead. Here is the positive lymph node here and have an uptake in the wall of the gallbladder. So this is clearly T2 above, T3 most likely, and N1.
But I would posit that you can't assume from that PET scan that that's cancer.
Right,
okay?
Right. So basically...
It's a gallstone with a thickened walled gallbladder, right? It could just be acute cholecystitis with positive lymph nodes. And there... Doing a biopsy would be a very, very reasonable thing, and endoscopic biopsy.
Yeah, so endoscopic
but
biopsy,
positive.
The positive.
What do you do, okay?
Yeah, the question is positive, then, you know, you biopsy these things. You don't want to, the key is you don't want to do like a transabdominal. You want to probably utilize these, you know, EUS, endoscopic ultrasound, and do a biopsy, and then confirm the diagnosis, and then what would you like to do? And most of the panel agrees probably the chemotherapy is the first step, neoadjuvant. Then, if these things stable or respond, then what would you do? That is a huge
so
question.
So now PET negative. So, mm-hmm. Peter, what would you do? PET negative 4 months later.
So our goal here is to try and weed out and use some selection to choose the patients that don't have the most aggressive disease and aren't going to have metastases within this four-month period. So we're looking for a test of time. It depends on what the first images look like. There are some patients who may need extensive resections, present jaundice, that I would say, I'm going to treat you with chemotherapy for 6 months. We may even stop chemotherapy and watch for 2 months because I am so pessimistic of the role of surgery in those situations. That doesn't mean that it can't be used in every patient. And there are some patients who deserve to have a trisegmentectomy bile duct resection because they've been on chemo for a while and have been selected into surgery. But in this sort of patient, after treatment with chemo for, pick your time period, 4 months, 6 months, without any sites of metastatic disease, then yes, at this point I would go back and I would do a liver resection and lymph node resection. I wouldn't do a Whipple in that setting.
Wukai? Dr. Wukai?
Yeah.
So I decided it's chemotherapy. Yeah.
Right. But 6 months later, now the nodes are smaller.
Yeah.
And it's PET negative.
Yeah,
PET negative. What operation would you do?
We go to operation room, and so biopsy, and so if residual tumor, and so if only R0 resection is feasible, we go to the radical cholecystomy with liver resection, liver bed resection, and portal lymph node dissection we perform.
Let me just ask one more question. The extent of the lymphadenectomy. So in these cases, you know, you see these necrotic node in the hepatic area and also backside of the pancreas, that's a superior duodenal pancreatic node. Those nodes should be included. That's my opinion. That's how I do the operation. But what is the extent of the nodal dissection? And what is the necessary or important step of doing? Anyone want to take a stab?
Well, at the very least, a portal lymphadenectomy, the hepatoduodenal nodes. I don't think that the resection of the hepatoduodenal nodes adds much to the morbidity of the operation. I may even go as far as removing the celiac nodes as well. Because I think at that point you're committed. You're really not increasing the morbidity of the operation much. And so I'd be inclined to do more of an extended lymphadenectomy.
Yeah, I think getting those superior pancreatic nodes and is a little bit technically challenging. You need to colonize completely and go in the junction of the pancreas and the bile duct. So I think if you haven't done that, then that's a little bit intimidating stuff to do. So, but I think we typically go down there, and particularly like a Japanese go down there and dissect those. And floor, the last question.
Oh, this Gomez from Ecuador. I had a personal experience about 16 patients with gallbladder cancer. We have what we call the South Pacific Syndrome. Chile has the first place in this, and we have a lot of experience. In this group of patients, I had a mucoepidermoid cancer of gallbladder. Which will be your behavior with this type of cancer, gallbladder cancer? About the Japanese colleague, I am a little bit... I don't say that it's not a good result, but I am surprised that he has 4 years of post-operative survival. It's fantastic because the gallbladder cancer, for us, that we know very well that disease, doesn't have that long time of survival. I congratulate for your results, but I don't know if I will make a Whipple operation for a patient who is with a gallbladder cancer. Thank you.
Yeah, I think a panel mostly concerned. So that's why we are saying biologically selecting these patients in a different way is a way to go rather than just jump on and do the operation. So that's the overall message of these advanced cases. Okay, great. Thank you for coming. And that concludes the session. Thank you very much.